Arthur Shenfield. Arthur is very well known to all of us, our dear friend, and we're delighted to have him back from England.
Let me first state my ideological position. From early years, I described myself as a liberal, meaning thereby an original classical type of liberal. But as the splendid word liberal was stolen, captured by socialists in this country a long time ago, and as progressively it also came to be stolen by socialists in my own country, I had at some stage to give up calling myself a liberal, without making long explanations of what type of liberal I was. Then, about a dozen years ago, I heard that in America people had coined the word libertarian to take the place of liberal and to denote a champion of the free society. And I was quite happy to call myself a libertarian. But now I find, and indeed found some years ago, that the splendid word libertarian has been captured or stolen by anarchists like Murray Rothbard and his friends. And I can't call myself a libertarian, because I'm not an anarchist. I believe in the free society, but I also believe in the need for a state. I am a minimal state man. And there, I believe, I'm in the authentic liberal, true liberal, classical tradition. All true liberals, I believe, in the past, and all the great champions of the free society, the authentic champions of the free society, have given a place to the state and have exercised their minds in dealing with the task of making it a limited, minimal state. So I suppose the best name I can use for myself is the one that Hayek uses, and that correctly uses, and that is Whig. Only the trouble is you then have to explain what a Whig is. Well, I suppose I'd better, in a few words, while standing on one leg, say that a Whig is a conservative who, however, pushes up close to the libertarian frontier, while a Tory is a conservative who pushes up close to the opposite frontier. Actually, I'm a Whig, but not the kind of Whig and not the kind of anything who would believe that only his particular brand must always hold the seats of power. I personally believe that the best kind of society is one which is alternately governed by the two brands of authentic conservatives, Whigs and Tories. Well, that's my position. And so it is, as I say, essentially a minimal state position. Hence, from the beginning, I differ from anarchist libertarians because, since I believe in the necessity of a state, I believe in the necessity of taxation. Now, I know that you heard Tibor McCann say this afternoon that you could have a state. He's a libertarian who believes in a minimal state, I gather. Well, you could have a state without taxation. I think that's false. This presents, of course, economic problems, but I do not believe it is possible to have a state, even a minimal state, without some taxation. Of course, it's perfectly true that a great many of the activities of the modern state can be turned over to a pricing mechanism. That's obvious. Indeed, taken right out of the hands of the state and given to the free market. It's also obvious that some of the functions which one might well decide to leave with the state could still be operated with a pricing mechanism. Yes, I understand that too. But in my judgment, there would remain residual functions which could not be financed except by taxation. And that, therefore, I think is a fundamental difference between me as some kind of conservative and at least anarchistic libertarians or even Tibor, who is not an anarchistic libertarian. Once one admits the necessity for taxation, one, of course, admits that one might get caught in a hornet's nest. Obviously, there are all kinds of difficulties and terrors that can arise from the admission of the necessity of taxation. However, I believe that, not seeking a heaven on earth, one can erect principles of taxation which would make the exercise of the taxing power tolerable to a free society. Obviously, the taxation has to be low. What low means is a matter of debate, but obviously it has to be low. Obviously, it must not be progressive, that is to say, graduated. And obviously, it must not be used for illiberal or anti-liberal purposes, like the redistribution of incomes or the redistribution of wealth. But I know there are deep and difficult problems, and they will never be completely solved. The next point about the economic functions of the state, which I believe one has to accept as a necessity, but which, of course, immediately presents difficulties, is that of what is called in this country the police power, the exercise of the police power. Not, however, I hasten to say, not eminent domain. I'll come to eminent domain in a moment. But the police power. That is to say, I believe that it is right that the state should be able to intervene in the rights of property for the purposes which our lawyers subsume under the heading of the police power, that is, for the health and safety and the morality of the public. That is to say, I believe that it is right for the state to intervene in order to prevent, say, contagious and infectious diseases, epidemics and things of that sort, from being spread, which involves, of course, closing down restaurants and doing things of that kind, inspecting slaughterhouses and declaring meat to be unfit for consumption. All that could be done by the market, of course, but nevertheless, I believe it is better, it is right, that that should be allowed to be a function of the state. I believe that if, say, there is a brush fire threatening the city of Los Angeles, it is right and proper for the governor of California to come along with his National Guard and destroy property, deliberately destroy property in the path of the fire. Of course, it might be destroyed anyway, but still, I believe he has the right to do that. If the Mississippi floods thousands of square miles over its banks, I believe it's right that the state or states should have the right to require levies to be set up one way or another, either by the state and then financed by taxation or whatever it may be. And I believe, firmly believe, that a good society would allow its state to pass and operate and apply laws against obscenity and pornography and the like. Well, of course, all these present difficult problems of boundaries. The whole problem of obscenity and pornography, the boundaries, of course, are all difficult. Questions such as whether brothels should be allowed and prostitution and so on. And I know, of course, that there are highly debatable questions all there. But I'm talking about principles, and I am in favor, as a minimal state man, with the right of the state to use to operate police power. Not called police power, by the way, in England. The term was abandoned long ago, but coming to a country with, in some respects, older and more archaic legal traditions, one finds that term used here. But not eminent domain. One of the great errors, I believe, of the founding fathers was to imagine that by saying in the Fifth Amendment that property should not be taken for a public purpose without just compensation, they solved that problem. The fact is that when property is taken, not for the purposes of the police power, but for the purpose of erecting a school or a hospital or a railroad or a pipeline or something like that, when property is taken for that purpose, then there can be no such thing as just compensation. They deluded themselves in thinking that they were abjuring the high-handed, despotic things that European governments did when they took private property for public purposes by ordaining just compensation. They never analyzed it, and they never realized that there is no such thing as just compensation, except, of course, compensation in a free market where the property is not taken from you by force. And I believe that in the case of schools and hospitals and railroads, etc., the public authorities that may wish to set them up must do the same as those who wish to set up a steel mill or a grocery shop or anything else and go into the market and acquire by free bargaining the property that they need. The point being, the difference being, that under the police power, there are needs like the protection of the public against epidemics, say, and the protection of the public against brush fires and things like that, which in my judgment can only be done successfully or can best be done successfully by the state. Whereas in the case of schools, hospitals, etc., etc., this doesn't arise. The next point that I have to mention, and I'll just be told I've got 1 minute, relates to banking, central banking, and the monetary system. Now, obviously, everything depends upon which monetary system you choose. Milton Friedman's, the gold standard, or Hayek's completely free market money system. I lean towards Hayek's completely free market monetary system in principle, and then there would be nothing for the state to do, except that I must confess I have a terribly uneasy feeling that we'll never see it. And after all, practicality is an important matter. And for that reason, I judge personally that the one that I would go for, partly on grounds of practicality, is a gold standard. The question then arises, does one need a central bank? Does one need a central banking system set up by the state? If you'll give me one more minute, Dave, may I just say what my views are on that. I believe that one does. And therefore, once again, I believe in the intrusion, in some measure, of state power in the field of money. I would not believe that if it were possible to have a gold standard or metallic standard system with 100% reserve banking. But I do not believe that 100% reserve banking is possible, nor do I believe that fractional reserve banking is fraudulent, as Murray Rothbard and some other libertarians assert. But the fact is, quite apart from whether it's fraudulent or not, it's not possible, because if you were to pass a law that all banks had to have 100% reserve in specie, in gold, assuming a gold standard, and if you could make that work, you wouldn't need any central bank. In fact, what would happen would be that quasi-banks, institutions not called banks, private people, all sorts of people would in fact then proceed to create money and create credit on a fractional reserve basis. There is no way out of that dilemma. And in my opinion, then, to operate a gold, a metallic standard, with a banking system which will willy-nilly operate on a fractional reserve basis, it's better to have a central bank than not to have a central bank. But, however, there's one big problem here. The central bank itself has got to be a rather special thing. It's got to be, say, like the Bank of England from 1870 to 1914. It's got to be manned by certain rare type of people. And, well, perhaps one might judge on the basis of practicality that only in one or two countries of elevated traditions, et cetera, might that be possible. Perhaps that might not be possible in this country. So my championship of the central bank is itself equivocal. Nevertheless, I throw it out to you as a question that has to be considered in the array of duties and rights and powers that a state ought to have in the economic field.